Warning, this podcast contains explicit content from the start. Amnesty's secret comedy podcast with your host, Julian Cleary.
Welcome, everyone, to this Amnesty International secret comedy podcast from the underbelly in Edinburgh, I believe. And I'm Julian Cleary, camp comic and renowned homosexual. Bespoke Nancy boy and taker of cock up arse. And how nice of you to all come, dressed casually as you are. I'm thrilled to the marrow to be here in Edinburgh, and there's something for everyone here. And, you know, I'm 53 now, which in gay years is 371. By rights, I shouldn't be seen in public. I should be in the Gay Museum, behind a glass case, flanked by Stephen Fry and Sandy Totsvig. So let's crack on. We've got stand-up coming your way from the lovely and endearing Carl Donnelly, and also the dour and delightfully deadpan Stephen Carlin. We're going to have a song from one of the stars of the Festival of Spoken Nerd, Helen Arney, and a lovely chat with Britain's most famous pub philosopher, Al Murray. I've got a few things I want to have out with him. And then, if you're very good, I'm going to sing you a song, and there's not a power on earth that will stop me. And remember, if you like everything you hear, keep listening to the end of this podcast to find out how you, the listener, can contribute to Amnesty International's human rights work. But let's get going with some stand-up. He was thinking of being a lawyer. In fact, he was a lawyer. But then he thought better of that. And the legal profession's loss is our gain. Please welcome the very lovely Al Lubell.
Thank you very much. Yes, my name is Al Lubell, and nice to be here at Amnesty International performing. And I am a comic. And being a comedian, I am a comic now. And being a comic, I get this question a lot. How did you get into it? Well, the first time I ever went to a comedy club, one of the first comics I saw that night, he was totally bombing, he was getting no laughs, and then he began shaking, and then he started stuttering, and then he began sweating. And I remember looking at him thinking, I can do that. But my name is Al Lubell. That is my name, Al Lubell. Al Lubell. I like saying Al Lubell. Probably because I chose Al Lubell. Al Lubell is my stage name. Yeah, you may think Al Lubell is two names. It's not, it's one name. Sting, Cher, Prince, Seal, Madonna, Al Lubell. Yeah, one name, Al Lubell. And Al Lubell is my stage name. See, my actual name, my real name is Al Lubell. It's my real name, Al Lubell. Now, Sting, that, of course, is his stage name, right? His actual name is Sting. Yeah. My actual name, Al Lubell. And I like both my names, Al and Lubell. That's why I changed my middle name. My middle name is Gordon. My full name is Al Gordon Lubell. I didn't like Gordon because I felt Gordon distracted and took away from Al Lubell. So I changed my middle name to another middle name that would not distract quite as much. So now my full name is Al Alibel Lubell. It's my full name, Al Alibel Lubell. My stage name, Al Lubell. My full stage name, Al Alibel Lubell. But my name is Al Lubell. People ask me who I am, I say I'm Al Lubell. I'm Al Lubell, I'm Al Lubell, I'm Al Lubell. I'm Al Lubell, I'm Al Lubell, I'm Al Lubell. Al Lubell, Al Lubell, Al Lubell. Al Lubell, Al Lubell, Al Lubell, Al Lubell, Al Lubell, Al Lubell, Al Lubell. You know what's strange? The more I say my name, the more y'all look at me like, who is this guy? And the answer, Al Lubell. So one night I'm playing a comedy club on the road right in the U.S. I'm doing my act. I'm going on and on and on about my name, as you might imagine. This guy in the audience, he heckles me. He interrupts my act. He shouts out, tell a joke. So I said, okay, I have this humor is a little too weird for you, a little too offbeat. You want something more traditional, like a joke. You want a joke. Okay, so these two Jews, that's right, these two Jews go into a bar. Each of them are named Al Lubell. I don't think he liked the joke. Anyway, thank you very much, folks. Enjoy the rest of your night. Thank you.
Al Lubell, ladies and gentlemen. You can tell that you can tell Al's having a very busy festival because he didn't have time to iron his T-shirt. Now then, I'm thrilled. He's only here for two shows, but he's found time to squeeze me in. Please welcome the pub landlord, Al Murray. What time was your show last night?
7 o'clock.
Oh, quite civilised. And yeah. did you have a nice time?
I had a lovely time last night, actually.
Lovely. And what are the themes of this show? What are you ranting about?
This show consists of an explanation of the euro from the pub landlord's point of view, how to save Great Britain from itself, which is basically, this is a spoiler, but basically what you have to do, when you get home, you have to wake your children and tell them that they can't fucking sing. And...
look, they're clapping.
They like that one.
They got there in the end.
They got there in the end. And then some stuff about Scottish independence, which is good, which I wrote when I was here last year. And I've been touring ever since. And I get people going, you can't do that. You won't be doing that stuff when you get to Scotland, will you? You know, we're better for the pub landlord to challenge that notion.
And I'm guessing... I'm guessing the pub landlord isn't pro-Euro, is he?
Well, he's not pro-Euro, but he's enjoying the chaos. So he likes the fact that Europe's gone horribly wrong.
Yes, he likes to have something to get his teeth into.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like that you're talking about him in the third person, because I didn't know when I saw your name on the list whether I was going to get you or the pub landlord.
Well, no, he comes out sort of in the evening. He's not really used to daytime. It is odd talking about it in the third person, because I don't normally think of it like that at all, actually. But it's probably better for my sanity.
Because if he were here, I was going to ask him. Yeah. You see, in my youth, I had my experimental heterosexual time when... I know all about the female body and the many erogenous zones that you are peppered with. And they all, I believe, during foreplay, need to be tweaked and twisted and stimulated simultaneously. It's like driving a helicopter. So I wondered if the pub landlord had ever stepped on the other side. Oh. You know, I was imagining a drunken lock-in.
Yeah, well, he used to say a thing, it was nice, but I didn't like it. implying that something had happened. But one of the things I've done over the years with the characters, that his memory is incredibly unreliable, and there've been things that he remembers and then he's forgotten, because he's always drunk.
Yeah.
So he doesn't really know what he's done, so which has been quite useful over the years in not actually having any continuity to the character at all. There's no canon to the character at all. There's no, like, well, he said that in 1998, so you've got to stick with it. No, he's pissed, he's changed his mind.
Is he evolving, though?
Yes, he is evolving, yeah.
How's he changed?
Well, the big difference, and the sort of thing I've enjoyed doing with it most is in the last two or three shows, I've done it that he's actually come to the realisation that people are listening to what he has to say, and that he's the common sense... He's going to save the country with some common sense solutions.
When you first thought of doing this character, because you've been doing it how long now?
It's 20 years next year.
Did it come to you fully formed?
Or no, it was a complete accident. I mean, it was here. It happened in Edinburgh.
Was drink involved?
No, fear and a deadline, basically. I was doing a show with Harry Hill over in the Pleasance Cabaret Bar.
Oh, I remember him.
Yeah, he's...
No, he's
never really made it stick at the Fringe, though. He's not here anymore. doesn't have to come back, the bastard. We had a show where we had a band at the end of the show, and I'd play drums in that, and then it was all made of bits and pieces. And I'd come up with something else to compare it when we previewed it in London that didn't work. And the night we started, I said, well, we're in a bar. Why don't we say that the compare's not shown up and the bar manager's offered to fill in? And he was sat there with his set list trying to remember his jokes. And he went, whatever. And I wrote three things to say. I went on and did it. And it was the oddest thing. It just suddenly worked. It appeared out of nowhere. Then Harry went on and did his sort of half hour. And I'm writing another half a dozen things to say. And then by the end of the run, I had the beginnings of it. And then we went on a tour. And at the end of the tour, the act was completely, fully formed.
Do you ever worry about the audience's... that, how can I put this? I had a look at your O2 DVD, there was proper kind of blokey blokes that might be a bit on the right side of the political spectrum. But nothing wrong with that. But do you worry that people are coming because they really kind of believe what the pub landlord's saying?
Well, in which case, they're insane. I don't mind. I mean, I'm quite happy. Anyone can laugh at whatever they like. I also think if people are misinterpreting it, it's a hilarious piece of mischief. It's like a cosmic prank. It's like, it's mischief if a guy sits there agreeing with me, because everything I'm saying is hallucinatory, insane bullshit. And if you're going along with that, I've got their money. It's hilarious.
Yes, bums on seats. But they join in the shouting and the swearing and everything.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yes. Well, how lovely. You're not going anywhere, are you?
No, I'm...
You're going
no,
to... I'm you look very nice, can I say.
Thank you. I thought I should make an effort. I mean, I remember coming to see you at the supper room at the Assembly Rooms in 91.
Yes.
And the first 20 minutes being about what everyone was wearing. Mm. And I've always logged it that if I ever end up in a situation like this, I should wear a nice jacket.
Well, maybe next time. Al Murray, ladies and gentlemen. Still to come, we've got stand-up from Stephen Carlin and a song from Helen Arney. There's more stand-up now. He's our rival in the Top 10 Comedy Podcast. So don't be too nice to him. It's the lovely Carl Donnelly.
Hi, sorry. My name's Carl. This is how I look all the time. I know, man. It's been a tough year for those of us that look like Rolf Harris. Let's get out of the way early doors, isn't it? Didn't see that one coming at all, honestly. What are the chances of it being him? I used to look so different as well. This is great for podcasting, by the way. But I used to have long curly hair and tinted glasses, and everyone used to take the mick out of me for looking like a bit of a wrong'un. So a year ago, I thought I'd get my hair cut and get new glasses, and now I look like an alleged paedophile, so it's not great, is it? It's a weird time. This whole yew tree thing is it's horrible, isn't it? But like, I think I've tried to work out if there's a positive we can move forward with it, away from it, actually, which I think I've worked one out, especially for younger generations. I think we finally got evidence there's no such thing as the good old days, which I think has always been a toxic way of living, looking back. You know what I mean? You got to look forward. And also, like, the way they go on about the good old days, it was like it was so amazing. Have you ever seen footage? It looked rubbish, mate. Like, up until about 1960, from what I can gather, about 80% of people's days were spent sweeping outside their house and like banging rugs and things. Like, old people walk around city centres that are beautiful and they look around going, oh, I remember when this was all fields. And you're like, mate, there's a Wagamama's there. That is better than a tree, right? This doesn't make any sense to me. And I don't like this whole sort of... This harking back, like they try and convince you that old-fashioned things are better than what we've got now, and it's not. Now we have cooler stuff. I went into a coffee shop recently and had this conversation with a man. I said, can I get a cup of tea, please? And he went, yeah, do you want loose leaf? And I said, no, because we invented bags about 40 years ago, mate. Why are you giving me something I've got to make myself? I didn't come for a part-time job, yeah? I came for a tea. But you'd get angry if you did that anywhere else. So imagine you went into like a bar and went, can I get a glass of the house white? And they just gave you like a bag of grapes and some instructions. Be angry, innit? Like my mate Peter Quinn, you can have his full name. I don't know why I gave you that. He's 31 from Tooting Broadway, if you want to find him on Facebook. He recently got an allotment, and this sums up everything I'm talking about. What is his problem, right? He said he's getting an allotment, and I just hit the roof. And if there's anyone from overseas who doesn't know what an allotment is, imagine all the hassle of a garden, but it's not your house. What the hell kind of idea is that? I get annoyed with having a garden, because I've got to clean up after it. If I had to get a bus to it, I'd be so angry on that bus. I'd be sitting there just livid the whole journey. But he got an allotment. And I obviously said, why? And he went, I want to start growing some food. And I thought my first counter-argument was good. I went, you know, there's a Tesco Metro at the end of the road. Why are you farming? That's what I said. But the second thing, I actually wanted to understand what he was talking about. So I said, like, what are you going to grow? And I thought this would help me get into his mind frame. And then I don't think he could have picked the worst food. He said peas. He's going to grow his own peas. Now, my issue here is, why is he growing something that never runs out? Surely if you're growing stuff, grow something you need an emergency, innit? But no one in this room has ever run out of peas. I think the bag of peas in my freezer came with the freezer. I just chip them off every now and again, they grow back. Like, me and my dad had a to-do, because I'm a proper, you know, I'm a modern poncy liberal, and my dad's an old-fashioned South London geezer who's just, you know, got all these horrible views for no reason. We had an argument about gay marriage, because I'm the biggest supporter of gay marriage in the world. I've worked it out, and possibly for the dumbest reason, I love weddings so much. Honestly, they are the... Oh, I think they're the only place I feel totally free. Do you know why? Because my favourite pastime is getting shit-faced in the daytime without people judging me. Oh, I go to weddings. 2 months I get excited before a wedding, honestly. But also, I'm all for it for the proper reasons, which is, you know, why would anyone be against gay marriage? It's ridiculous. And the arguments make no sense. One of my favourite arguments to hear, because it's so dumb, is the Adam and Eve line. Have you heard that? When homophobes go, it's Adam and Eve, mate. Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. As if Adam and Eve ended well. They got booted out of the Garden of Eden for being knobs. And also, it's the dumbest analogy. Do you know the full story is that Adam was made in God's image and then Eve was made out of one of his ribs and they were left to their own devices. Now, sorry to be a bit of a lad about this, but if I was left in a garden with a lady and knowledge I can make more women out of my ribs... I would have a lot of women. I'd be one wobbly mother. I'd be flopping around the garden, being held up by my harem of women. Guys, I've been Carl Donnelly. Take it easy. Cheers.
Carl Donnelly, ladies and gentlemen. Pro-gay marriage makes comedy about peas and a nice snug pair of jeans. It's what you want in a man. Time for some full frontal nerdity now. It's geek songstress Helen Arney.
Hello there. Yes, I am a geek songstress. I did a show here last year called Helen Arney, Voice of an Angle. You all know that's a maths joke, all right? If you enjoyed that, my show this year will give you a Large Hadron. Sorry, that wasn't a love song. that was a song about the 2001 agricultural crisis and the government's overzealous response to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Helen. You've got a lovely voice.
Thank you very much.
Do you write serious songs as well? I was just wondering, listening to that, because you there's sort of a certain poignancy to your voice.
I never started writing songs until I started doing comedy. I started doing stand-up and realised... I was not all that good at just talking at people. And I had to just use... With comedy, you understand that you have to use everything you've got. You have to use every little inch of your personality, everything you can find. And it was actually doing a cabaret gig with a burlesque dancer. And I said, how do you become successful? And she said, you've just got to use everything you've got. So it was music or stripping, basically. That was what I was left with.
Did you learn the ukulele? Is it a ukulele?
It is a ukulele, yes.
Did you learn that for the act, or were you already accomplished?
I used to play oboe in orchestras, and I used to play piano, but the oboe is not an instrument welcome in many comedy clubs.
You have to blow it, don't you?
Yes, it really... and very hard, yeah. It's a very challenging instrument. It's a joke itself, the oboe, but it's not so good for telling jokes at the same time.
Well,
so I took up the ukulele.
Could,
yeah.
Perhaps you could work that in.
Or you could.
I can't. I could work in an oboe, believe me. I used to... Look, I'm sorry. You're making up your own jokes now. There's an element here, Helen. I used to bring a guitar on stage, and I can't play at all, simply so I could make a joke about tightening my G-string.
I have snapped my G-string live on stage.
Have you?
Is there a
video?
Not one that I'm prepared to put on YouTube.
I was no good at science or maths or any of that side of things when I was at school. Were you?
I wanted to be. And I went to one of Brian Cox's lectures recently about a quantum theory thing that he'd done on the TV. What happens to me is I get 9/10 of the way in, and then he explains one last thing, and you go, nope. afraid not. That's just not going in.
My brain can't cope. It's just that you, one thing or the other, really. I was sort of far too busy thinking up buggery and oral references. But there is a whole science world out there. I was looking at your diary, and you're very busy at these things like science festivals, aren't
yes,
you?
Yes, I have a show with my partner, my real-life partner. We do domestic science as well, which is us living our life through the prism of science.
We so all do domestic science, don't we?
We all do. Or domestic, or pharmacology, whatever your favourite thing is at home.
Are you trying to tell us you've got a meth lab at home?
Well, thank you so much. It's fascinating, isn't it, this world? The lovely Helen Arney, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
So it's a bit more comedy before I sing. And if you're going to listen to the end, and please do, we will tell you how you can help Amnesty International. So don't go anywhere. Now, next, he had a secret life as a gambler, and now he's telling us and the world all about it. It's Stephen Carlin.
Good afternoon, folks. Hello. I'm Scottish, so I'm the token Scot on the bill this afternoon. I'm Scottish, but I don't drink alcohol, actually. Do gamble, but I don't drink alcohol. I don't drink anymore. I should say, I used to drink, and I was extremely good at it. Because I put in the hours. Natural talent will only carry you so far. Then I stopped. I don't like saying quit. That sounds, frankly, a little bit American. You know, you meet those Americans, I quit drinking. This is the sort of people that think they're alcoholics because they drink one bottle of wine a day. Like, bottle of wine a day, that's not an alcoholic. That is the mark of a gentleman. Or a school teacher. Listen, I didn't quit drinking, I retired. There's a very big difference. I'm 36, I did 20 years in the business, all in, man and boy. Then just walked away at the top of my game, which is not easy. It's basically one night I was lying face down in a pool of my own vomit, and I thought, do you know what? I've nailed this now. Can't get any better at it. And it wasn't just the drinking, I nailed everything about it, all the skill sets, like crossing the street by the most diagonal route possible. Nailed getting home and forgetting how I got home. Yeah, I loved that, when you get home and forget how you did it. I think that was the closest my life ever came to genuine magic. You know when you wake up and you don't even know where you are, and then suddenly it dawns on you that you're in your own room? And they're like, yes. I've done it again. 100% record this week. I have nailed, I don't want to boast, but I've nailed standing at a bar at 3 a.m. with a total stranger discussing how tomorrow we're going to set up a company together. Yeah, so I don't drink alcohol. I drink beer. Come on, don't judge me. Beer's not proper drinking. So look at a bottle of beer. The contents are about 5% alcohol. 5%. That's a rounding error. They may as well say 95% of this product is not what you'd like it to be. If it's 5% alcohol, what's the other 95%? Water, I reckon. You know, human beings, we're only 80% water. There's actually more water in beer than there is in us. By rights, drinking beer should sober you up. Even Scotch whisky, only 40% alcohol. When I was at school, 40% was a fail. Do you know that human beings share 10% of the DNA of a banana? That's science. Like, just think about that. All of us today, each and every one of us, we are more a banana than a bottle of beer is alcohol. So just shoot him, and see the next time you're pulled over for drink driving by the police and they say, sir, madam, you've been drinking alcohol, you're quite within your rights to look at them and say, well, officer, no more than that you are a piece of fruit. But thank you very much, folks. You've been lovely. I'm Stephen Carlin. Thank you.
So we're almost done now. All that remains is for you to go wild and crazy on my behalf to thank our guests, Al Lubell, Al Murray, Carl Donnelly, Helen Arney, and Stephen Carlin. So I thought I'd get this off my chest. We've had a lovely afternoon, but this is a song for our gay and lesbian friends around the world, for whom life may not be such a scream. We're legal now, and almost fit to wed. And we ain't sinners, Desmond Tutu said. And although I probably won't get queer bashed here, I don't think it's cool quite yet to be a queer. There's songs that say, just shoot us in the brain. And in Iran, they hang us from a crane. And although it's getting better, year by year, I don't think it's cool quite yet to be a queer. In Africa, the homosexual male knows loving leads to court and then to jail. And in that terrifying atmosphere, I don't think it's cool out there to be a queer. Among the lesbians that I have known was Fanny Ann from Sierra Leone. They murdered her because she made them fear the notion that it's cool to be a queer. You may think I ain't qualified to preach, but I have all I need within my reach. Well, listen, folks, I want to make it clear. I don't think it's cool yet to be a queer. A child is born believing he is free to love another unconditionally. But then there's those who teach him the idea that it ain't cool to grow up as a queer. So what we need is a different attitude, a way in which relations might be viewed. As long as your affections are sincere, straight's okay, but it's cool to be queer. Straight's okay, it's cool to be gay. Hooray, hooray, it's cool to be gay. Like I might say, it's cool to be gay. Thank you, bye-bye.
You've just been listening to free comedy courtesy of Amnesty International. Please make a donation to our vital work. My name is Christian Benedict. I'm Crisis Response Campaign Manager, and I've worked at Amnesty International for 10 years. I manage our response to major crisis situations in the world, making sure our global campaigning is coordinated and effective. I'm currently spending most of my time on the situation in Syria, where thousands of people continue to stand up for their rights, defying gunfire, tanks, and fighter jets, to demand an end to poverty, corruption, and repression. They're calling for a future where human rights are respected and protected. I work with many of these activists on the ground to promote our human rights messages and effect positive change. I do this work because I want to help make a positive difference in the lives of those on the receiving end of human rights abuses and those fighting to prevent abuses, but also to challenge those perpetrating the abuses. Amnesty gives me the opportunity to do that. To find out more about my work and Amnesty, then just go to amnesty.org.uk and please donate £5 by texting FREEDOM and your full name to 70505. Thank you.
Your text will cost £5 plus one standard message costing up to 10p. Amnesty UK receives at least £4.75. Please ask the bill payer's permission. To unsubscribe from contact, text STOP to 70505 at any time. Full terms and conditions at amnesty.org.uk/SMS terms.